This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. This is Frida Liu. It's Race Again on Enterprise, and Roshan Turin from Leadernomics here with us. And we're talking about the top 10 HR predictions for 2017. I have to ask though, Roshan, I mean, why are you deciding to talk about HR trends?
Yeah, no, I you know, every year I talk about different, you know, I talk about top leaders and so on. This year, thought, you know, the function that we need to support a lot is the HR function. And, you know, sometimes HR, we don't really think about, hey, what should we be doing strategically? Mm. Sometimes you get stuck in the very tactical
functional, administrative kind of thing.
Correct. And so, you know, I thought, you know, we, and you think about 2016, right? It's been a painful year for everybody, a lot of pains and struggles. And I think HR is not exempted from,
Yeah, we just talked about Maidin, right? First time lost in 60 years.
Yeah, I mean, that was shocking. I mean, to me, listening to that was, wow. And knowing, I mean, they're a very good team, I mean, with Amir and all, but to see that everybody's struggling. I think the HR function has to play a lot bigger role in 2017 if we want to see companies, because it cannot just be sitting there and looking and being an organization that says, oh, we're here to just execute wish lists and different requests. So I thought, you know, I had about prior in the last 3-4 months, you know, I took a short break to just talk to people, right? So I was just interviewing people and, you know, talking to CEOs, talking to HR leaders. So based on that, I started to say, can I accumulate all these things and put it together for HR and say, here are some trends for HR to think about. And this is not about HR people talking. It's also about CEOs. Mm. So, you know, folks like Lee Long Nian from Citibank. I mean, he's very passionate about, you know, the role that HR needs to play in terms of partnering and being a business partner. So, you know, taking insights from different leaders, Tan Sri Liu is saying, I mean, there's many, many leaders out there that I have constant conversation with. And, you know, when you listen to them and say, here are what business priorities are, HR should have also a list to say, here are HR priorities that must mirror the business priorities. It cannot be a separate standalone list. So I think what you hear is a function, you know, a look at a function, a HR function. But you can still take this and say, what does the supply chain function needs to do? What's the IT function needs to do? What does the finance function needs to do? So it's very similar. It's just that the thought process needs to be, I am not here to, as a finance function, to be a bean counter and do reports that are better. It's not about better reporting. Mm. It's about how can I drive the business results and how can I help the business in this tough environment. You know, same with supply chain. It's not just about ensuring productivity or optimal delivery, but it's really about how do I become a strategic weapon for the business to enable the business to succeed, you know, beyond our wildest dreams. So, and really, 2017, you need everybody to be optimized, to be really thinking business.
And it's usually like during the tough times, that's the time to more so to, you know, be a little bit more strategic in how you can use your
absolutely
your
and pull together as an organization, because I think we are very siloed sometimes. You know, we say we are HR, we're finance, we're IT, and then we forget that, hey, there's a business goal, and the business goal needs to be one that is ingrained in all our functions. So that's really what it is, trying to put on a business hat and say, look, as a leader, as a business leader, you know, here's what I'm thinking of, and if I were HR, here are some things that I would want, you know, the HR team to really think about. And that's really what it is.
Okay, so you've got your top 10 predictions for 2017. What's the first prediction?
Yeah, so I think HR in Malaysia, I mean, this specifically for Asia, because I think a lot of, you know, let's talk about Europe and US. I think a lot of them have already done this. But I think 2017 will be the year HR turns digital in a big way. And I think we flirt with it, you know, as a function, there's a you know, we kind of flirt and
dabble
say, yeah,
with it.
Yeah, we dabble with it, you know, and a bit of, you know, here's a bit of learning here and there. But really, I think 2017, the theme across Asia for HR will be digitizing HR. And you know, Deloitte, right, there's a study that they did that HR and business leaders would have to completely rethink the way they manage, they engage and develop people, because everything becomes digital. And you know, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, but that we, because of the way things have turned digital, that our concentration, you know, is worse than a goldfish, right? Mm. I mean, we are 8 seconds, whereas a goldfish can do for 12 seconds. So we've become, you know, less because of all the digital pieces and the constant information. So I think the business side, where CEOs are looking at, I mean, if you look at the trends on the business side, big data, Internet of Things, you know, and other, you know, and now we have data scientists. We have a lot of innovation on to drive business productivity, customer engagement, customer touch. All this is being done on the business side. I think HR needs to look, how do we invest in digital cockpits, for example, to really enable CEOs to see what's happening internally in the organization, you know, with regards to people, to look at digital learning, to look at how do we take different pieces that doesn't make sense And how do we optimize it? Because if you look at productivity itself, right, HR can drive a lot of it. How do we have a lot of processes, you know, we suffocate our employees with the, you know, different HR bureaucratic processes. You got to fill up this form, do this.
Yeah,
and, you know, you want to get a token, you have to do this and that. I mean, parking. So there's a lot of administrative thing that can be truly automated. Onboarding, you know, there's a whole process that so you look at all the different HR processes, from the talent attraction process to onboarding to the talent development to the talent management to the talent retention to the engagement. All of it, there are elements of it that has to be one-on-one. Because that's what we do. We are people, right? There needs to be a social element. But you can look at the non-value elements and say, how do I automate, digitize, and really think like a business leader? How do I ensure value? So if I have three people wasted trying to do things that can be automated, you can use those people to drive, you know, some of the other pieces that I'll talk about in a bit. So I think 2017 will be our year where HR has to become tech savvy, and HR will become a function that everybody will be proud of, to say, hey, yeah, this, you know, just like the rest of the business are becoming tech savvy, HR has also got to be tech savvy. Yeah.
You know? And I think also, like, you know, if you get rid of all the you know, the paperwork and bureaucracy and use technology, then your time is better spent more strategically.
Absolutely. Yeah, because you think about so many agendas that we have to cope with all this, right? Automating pieces that are not value-added is what's going to be a big game-changer for the function as a whole. And any function, I think it's not just HR, I think finance, every function has to really look at how to digitize and optimize their functions, you know.
You know, radio presenters also need to be digitized.
Maybe.
Okay, the second prediction is HR will start focusing on employee experiences.
Yeah. So here's what's happened. It's... if you look at the business, right, we spend a lot of time looking at customer experiences. So customer experience, we do this wow. I mean, if you look at, you know, banks and you look at all the different businesses, we've mapped, here are the touch points where we touch the customer, right? So how do we take those touch points and how do we make sure there's wow moments? So that's how do we engage the customer? How do we, you know, retain the customer? How do we really walk with the customer? And how do we expand wallet share? So that's what the business has done.
Yeah.
Now, why can't HR do the same for employees? You know, if you look at what are the employee touch points, you know, where are the employees engaging, not just with customers, but internally with each other, you know, in the teams, with HR. And if you look at, there are many touch points where employee, you know, usually when they meet HR, a frustrating thing when they go out, like, it's HR. I mean, we in general, there's a frustration when it comes. So if HR can do the same, right, just as the business has mapped all, see, customers used to be the same. They were very frustrated with the business, but a lot of businesses have done a lot of good work in trying to understand what are those touch points.
Mm.
How do we make it easier? You know, maybe it's digital.
But
then HR has to take this. Imagine the employees are the HR's customers, right? So look at the employee touch points with HR and how do I make those touch points wow moments.
Mm.
You know, it's a moment for us to come out and say, wow, that was amazing. HR is amazing. You know, and I think if we have, just like the business, think about customer experiences, we create employee experiences. And I think that's going to be the big key for HR in 2017. If we start changing our mindset to say that, here, I'm a guy with a ruler and I'll beat employees that walk out and misbehave and so on. But think of saying, how can I create a wow moment that even when they get feedback, right? Because part of the problem is I have to give hard feedback to say, hey, you're out of line. You know, this was not right, right? When you do that feedback, right, how does it come out like, wow, I learned so much, it's a great insight, it's a wow moment, amazing, right? And I think if we have that philosophy of changing our experiences that we give, you know, to our employees, to be like how the business gives, because you know, businesses will be very careful about those moments with customers.
You see, that's the thing as well. You know, when you make the employees happy, that's reflected in how they treat their customers. You hear these stories of, you know, Starbucks.
Yeah.
You hear the story of Ritz-Carlton.
Yep.
How their touch points with your employees.
Right.
And that becomes then translated into that experience when they meet with their customers.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know?
And I don't think it's about making them happy. I think it's about making them have that, wow, okay, I just got reprimanded because I did something wrong, but I understand why.
Yes.
I've got a big insight,
yep,
and I feel more confident and I'm going to grow from this, right? So that's a wow moment, right? Because to you, it's like a growth moment for you. So it can be, it not necessarily is about happy, because if you want to make everyone happy, right, you can't. And the other thing is, you will then go into pampering mode. And the idea is not, you know, HR is not there to pamper. And this is what sometimes happens, you know. We think our job is to pamper, right? No, it's about that experience, right? So even if, and later I'll talk about the rejection and experience. Right? That's one of the things I think HR can, it's a great idea to, you know, when we reject a candidate and say we don't want to hire you, right? How, wow, that's a bad experience, right? But how can we make that a positive? Because it's really about enabling experiences that when I walk into this company, when I interact with HR, I say, look, I know this is, I know that they had to give me a hard message. But you know, my experience from getting that hard message was not a negative one. Mm. And that's key, right? Okay. And how do we manage that?
You know? All right. And so we'll talk about the other predictions by Roshan Tirum from Leadernomics in just a moment. You're listening to Raise a Game. Stay tuned at BFM 89.9.
Break from mediocrity. BFM 89.9.
You're listening to Raise a Game on Enterprise. Good morning. Frida Liu here talking to Roshan Tirum from Leadernomics. We're discussing top 10 HR predictions for 2017. We've only discussed two. One, HR will finally turn digital in a big way. HR will start focusing on employee experiences. What's the third one, Roshan?
Yeah, so I think the next piece is culture. And I think we talk a lot about culture, but business leaders sometimes assume HR is managing culture. You know, we don't have to bother about it. But lately, in the last 2-3 years, I think the business leaders themselves, you know, CEOs are saying, look, we want to take culture and it's important, let's drive it and so on and so forth. But I think HR has to play a role. And HR has to understand the importance of how culture drives behaviors and priorities of employees. So, and this behavior is dictated by mindset and beliefs, right? So how can HR play a more strategic role in driving cultural change? Because culture is about intentionally altering a person's experiences through the things they hear, they touch, they see, they feel. And this experience results in a changed mindset, right? So HR has, you know, I talked about the employee experiences now, right? And if we start having the employee experience mindset, meaning we are thinking about, Frida, you know, when you interact with me, HR, I want to make sure that at the end of the day, your experience of our interaction is amazing, right? Just that mindset. The next thing comes to say, okay, how can I ensure that what you feel, what you hear, what you touch is enabling you to have a mindset that drives what our behavior that we want to have in the organization. So, you know, so imagine that I look at, you have certain experiences. Because of experiences, you believe, your beliefs and mindset, you know, starts to come this way. I start to alter that. So if you believe that it's impossible, you know, like yesterday I was playing a game, right? And before the game, my guys were, you know, we were a bunch of 40-year-olds, right? So we saw this bunch of kids, 25, you know, 20 to 25-year-olds. And so the guy was sending us WhatsApp, you know, all our my players, just as I was driving, and saying, you know, it's impossible. We're dead. You're going to be dead meat, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, all kinds of messages, all negative. Like the mindset was, we lost. Right, yeah. So we start 10 minutes and we're down 2-0, right? And then I'm like, guys, we can do this, you know. I don't think they're that great, right? And we slowly start to believe, and slowly we manage to get a goal, and finally another goal, and before the end we scored third one and we won 3-2, right? So it's that thing, right? But HR needs to be driving that, right? To make employees believe that. And that's culture. So you create experiences so that this culture permeates, and that culture enables you to believe something. You believe your organization can do it. You believe that even though it's a tough environment, we can win, right? And I think HR plays a big role in enabling that. We don't think like that. You know, we think that, oh, the business is doing bad, so I can't do anything. It's the business leader, it's the sales guy. But what are you creating to enable them to believe, to succeed? And that's a big part of the HR, you know, there's a lot of stuff that happens internally in the organization. Because if everyone's deflated and lost, right, they're going to lose anyway. Mm. It's a foregone conclusion. Mm. HR needs to play that role. And that's what I mean by culture. A big role that HR must play in 2017.
When I look at culture, I look at values at the same time, right? Are you an organization that then says different strokes for different folks? I like you, so you got different rules. Okay, so this is something that people are watching. And personal experience, you know, I was offered a job somewhere, and I just looked at the culture of the organization and who it belongs to, and ultimately, so that's the culture of the organization. And then you don't even look at money, mm-hmm. because you said that culture will permeate and it will affect
absolutely.
You. And true enough,
absolutely.
That's what the company did, you know, just fired employees.
Correct.
Had I joined, that would have been the culture of that company.
Right. And that's why I think HR can play such a strategic role, right? Because you get to tweak, you get to influence and you get to make that new culture, but you have to intentionally do it. The problem is we let things slip by. And there's no intentional thought. And this is what I mean by strategic, right? You can say, okay, you as an outsider can see this is the problem, right? Mm. But as a HR person, we need to say, hey, here's a problem. What can I intentionally do to tweak it so that it will become something else? And I think that's the work that needs to be done in 2017 for HR.
Okay. Next one is also very much technology related.
Yeah, but it's slightly different. So I think the real reason is to get real-time feedback. And I think it's about investment in big data. So HR needs to make that step to invest in big data. So that's number four. But here's why. Because I think the way we can learn, the way we can grow is feedback. And I don't think we have mechanics in place in many organizations to get feedback. So I think if HR starts to invest and say, look, how do I get feedback information, and then loop that information back to employees, I think there's an opportunity to change the way we teach employees. So instead of sending them just for training, we are now giving them feedback loops. And by and big data enables you that, right? Because I'm getting data from the field to say that, hey, here's how we are doing in the sales front. Here's why our proposal, you know, we send out 100 proposals, only 3 get signed. You know, all these things are good data that HR can say, hey, is it a capability issue? Is it a confidence issue? Is it a wrong, you know, we're going after a wrong customer mix? And when we create this feedback issues, right, we're actually helping to improve an employee. And that's really what the goal is, right? I mean, part of HR's role is to drive development, employee development. And the only way to truly develop a person is to give them real feedback. And that's where I think the power of big data. But I think HR has to stop thinking that training is what somebody tells me, hey, they're lousy at speaking. Can you send them for a public speaking class? Right? And we do, right?
Yeah.
Versus how can I validate, right? So somebody says, look, our sales teams are not effective. Can you put some sales training, right? Let me find out which area, you know, is it really the proposal crafting? Is it really the one-on-one situation? And when you do that, right, you can effectively not only give that feedback back to the employee, you can also then craft the right...
the right training, the
absolutely,
right...
Absolutely, yeah. Right? And that's where feedback is important, right? And I think HR teams got to start being... I don't think we will... When I say HR will start investing... I'm not saying we're going to do this well. I'm going to say we're going to start thinking in 2017 to say that, hey, I'm a business leader. I need to start investing in big data, just as other functions have already started investing in big data. So that's okay. that's the point there.
Okay, another one. Also technology related,
yes.
The fifth one.
And the fifth one is specific to digital learning, right? So I think because you've got feedback, now you have to look at training and say, what are pieces that I don't have to waste time and having a trainer come and teach? What are things that I can just give just in time? You know, meaning like, and this digital learning, right? So you have a platform, you have an LMS, and you have a lot of content. You know, as you get this feedback and say, hey, here's some. I say, look, here's an opportunity to learn something online. And after you learn it online, you know the content part, let's try and contextualize it. And that's where the coaches, and that's where the other pieces of the learning and development cycle of HR comes in. But I think HR teams are not, they think of digital learning like I'm throwing content, you know, here and there, bits and pieces. It has to be structured. It has to be customized, meaning my company, you know, in BFM, we are trying to drive this agenda. Okay, so what does that mean in terms of learning for my employee? What does that mean for learning for specific teams? What does that mean for learning for the individual? And I need to take that big business goal. I need, so, and then it's not just about throwing some programs. It's about looking and saying, hey, these things are important for Frida and her team. These things are important for, you know, somebody else and, you know, David and his team and so on and so forth. So as we start crafting these things out, we start to realize that we don't have to waste time. It's impossible to send. In fact, we talked about this before. Boring, right? You go to a one-day classroom and listen there for 8 hours. You just want specific content for yourself. Now, the other piece you want is that you want to contextualize it. But that was you sitting down with someone or a coach or, you know, three of you in your team grappling through it and working through it. And so I think if HR, and again, I think it will start taking off in a big way. And I mean, to me personally, also at Liramix, we started, I 2 years ago, we said, look, we got to get serious about contextualizing learning. And even if it's going to cannibalize our core business, fine.
Yeah.
Because I think it's the right thing to do. And it's the right thing to do for our customers. So and that's why we made that big step to make that big investment in driving digital learning in a big way.
Okay. The sixth one is that HR will focus on teams rather than individuals.
Yeah, and this one is slightly controversial. So I think the way we structure HR today is we pay bonuses based on how good you are as an individual. Right, the team may suffer and not execute, but you still, you know, are measured individually. And it's interesting because there are a lot of research now that's coming out is that team-based structures and team-based bonuses and team-based environments enable. So you may have 10 very excellent individuals individually, but as a team, they're very poor. And you may have, you know, and you know, I was at HR Network a couple days ago, and there was a quote from Max's CEO when he first came in. He said, hey, can't believe you're such great individuals, but together as a team, they execute poorly. You know, it's Max's person that shared at that forum. And, you know, as I was thinking, I was saying, yeah, it's true, you can have very good individuals, But as a team, it's poor. At the same time, you may not have a very strong individuals, but as a team, they execute. And you see this a lot in sports, right? You see a team like Leicester who have great, you know, not necessarily have great individuals, but as a collective team, at least for one season.
I think of Germany anyway.
Yeah, and they do that, right? They right. somehow collectively. And Google did this research called Aristotle. Fantastic. You can Google it. It's called Project Aristotle. And what they did is they started to learn how, why teams thrive and why they become very productive. And as I saw this insight, I say, hey, this is interesting. If we in HR can take some of these insights and say, how do we structure? So if a team succeeds, shouldn't we make sure that team is rewarded regardless, right? If a team fails, shouldn't that team also not be rewarded in such a way? But we are funny, you know, and our KPIs not necessarily are team-based or organizationally-based. So I think HR in Malaysia and Asia, I think a lot of other organized companies have started thinking about this. How do we figure out, and maybe it's very hard to take away a team individual piece because we said, not fair, my team, you know, I'm the only one that, you know, nine of them are horrible. But you see what happened is if we start moving structures to team-based, this one person who's a superstar will now start to say, how can I enable the other nine to be as good as me because my success is
dependent
on them as much as it depends on me, you see. But we don't, right?
We're encouraging interdependence here.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I think it's a mindset change again for HR, right? To say, I have to move away from individual recognition and individual, payment and bonus and all the structures to a very team-based one. And I think we'll start to see the evolution this year. You know? It actually, if you think about it, in the 50s and 60s, it was always like that one. To some extent, you talk to all these companies, they say, oh, company do well, everybody get, you know, and company do badly, nobody get. But we've moved away, you know, with all the Western influences that have come here, we've started becoming very individualistic, you know, because in some of these Western countries, it's about individual, right?
Yeah.
I succeeded, I don't care about the rest, right?
Yeah.
And we've copied them to some extent, forgetting that we have actually had a very strong base of team ethics and team-based leadership and team-based execution, you know.
Mm.
And over the years, we've diluted that.
Yeah, and we've always glorified individuals.
Absolutely. And even in recognition, you know, we recognize a few individuals but not recognize teams. And so I think even my own team, you know, my challenge to my HR is like, no, let's be very controversial and let's not give individual stuff. Let's figure out how to do team-based stuff.
Mm.
And in fact, let's do organization stuff. If the whole organization succeeds, hey, let's do as a company.
But at the same time, don't you think also sometimes the individual needs to be recognized as well?
I think so. But I think that's the balance that we need to figure out.
Right.
So I think it's not going to be a complete, it's going to be...
Hence controversial.
I think it's going to be what I call a weightage thing, where you say, look, today maybe 90% is individual, you know, we need to move it down to 50-50 or so on. And I think as time goes on, you'll find what the right balance is. Again, you know, if you talk in a team, if one person gets rewarded, the other guy say, actually, I contributed, but he gets the recognition or she gets the recognition because the boss likes her the most. And so so when you start a team-based thing, you actually start to avoid some of these things. Because look, if the team fail, everybody fail. If the team succeed, everybody succeed. Yeah. So I think we have created some internal politics because of the way we measure, because of the way, you know, especially HR, the way we divide and conquer. Mm. And then we say, look, first rank, you know, I came from GE, right? So, but I'm changing my mind about a lot of things, right? Because when we do things like that, we are forcing, you know, we say, who's the worst bottom 10 and top 10? And, you know, we've got all these things.
I hear they shoot the bottom 10.
So, but if you think about it, what behaviors are we creating? We are creating And you know, today, 21st century is about collaboration.
Mm.
We're creating less collaboration and more silos because of this. You know?
We'll discuss the four other trends right after this. I'm here with Roshan Chin from Leadernomics. And of course, we'll talk about that after the Bursa update. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Bloggers for Malaysia. BFM 89.9.
Yes, this is Raise Your Game on Enterprise. Roshan Tiran from Leadernomics here. We're talking about the top 10 HR trends, his predictions for HR. We've gone through six. And of course, if you miss any part of this, you can always go and download our app and listen to our podcast, available on, as we were just saying, on the iTunes Sorry, you know where you go. Android and Apple. All right, so the seventh trend, HR will need to plan the future as work continues to evolve.
Yeah, I think this HR has to start thinking about the future. And here's where I feel, you know, I was at a session with HR leaders, and one of the questions posed to me is, you know, what's the future of HR? You know, will HR be disappearing soon? Because I think one of the things that's going to happen is work is going to change. Mm-hmm. So today, work is time-based, meaning I pay you for the number of hours you put in. But you already start to see that people are not time-based anymore. People are starting to be output-based. You know, based on certain output, I pay you. So if you do 10, regardless if it takes you 1 hour to do 10 or 5 hours or 5 days, I pay you X amount. So you then become very efficient at certain output. Mm. And over time, we have to start managing dependencies, meaning this person is outsourced. This, you know, it's not to say outsourced, but they're part of the organization, but they're on flex time. They're on, you know, we call it flex time because we don't know how to do, but really they're output-based. We are saying that for 2 hours a week, you produce X amount. You know, we still time-based, but over time, we'll start to forget about the 2 days. We'll say, look, you produce the output. Yeah. The guy may take 1 day, but another guy may take five, but we pay them both the same because it's not... So I think when that happens, right, HR has to redesign the organization. And already you start to see there are a lot of stresses in the organization because of this. Because somebody says, I want to work part-time, I want to work this, I want to work that. You know, I'm giving you five articles to write a week. You know, so as different people start to do different things, HR has to manage this because, you know, the entire organization glue is what you stitch together. And this will become more and more as time goes on. So I think we have to start, this is my trend, the trend here is we need to start planning the future. That means we need to start thinking about this. And we need to start saying, you know, as organizations go further apart, how do we bond? How do we create the synergies that... Because today, for sure, everybody's there. We can have meetings. Mm. We can talk when people are there. But as people continue to evolve to say, I'm going to be working here and I'm going to be remote and virtual, and there still needs to be bond, there still needs to be coordination, there still needs to be the glue that enables this to happen. And that's where the... How do you plan future work spaces, organization structures and enable this to happen? So that's my point. And I think that's a trend that's here to stay. So we cannot say it's not, we're only going to hire employees that are going to work full time. And you see that some HR, no, only if you can work full time, we'll hire you, right? But long term, you see the best people are the guys who are going to give, because to them, it's like, look, I can produce output. You know, this 10 output in 1 hour, that guy takes 5 days, right? Yeah. Because I know I'm going to be valuable.
Yeah. It's not only that, because you know that I've got 5 days to do it, so I take my time. Whereas I know that if I'm going to be paid on this, I'll be more efficient.
Absolutely.
It's called the Parkinson's Law.
Correct.
Right? So usually before a holiday, a lot of work gets done. Suddenly, there's a lot of work that can be done.
And that's the way organizations should be, efficient and so on. And we pay you based on output. It's fair.
Yeah.
You know, to everyone, because then you will produce more and you can get richer. You know, to some extent. Yeah. So the employee is happy and there's no time commitments, you know, and you become more efficient. And the output as a company, you're happier because, hey, I'm getting 10 output for this price. I can actually figure out how to do certain things. And you know, it's almost the AirAsia model to some extent.
Right. All right. Now, the next one, HR will begin managing rejected candidate experience.
Yeah. So this is something interesting because, you know, I had this last year in my organization, right? When candidates get rejected, you know, my HR team meets them and they get rejected, right? They sometimes don't get noticed. You know, we don't get back to them, right? And it happens in many companies.
Yes.
Like, it's not just mine. Like, I'm just openly sharing. Like, right?
Okay.
So what happens is sometimes they interview, they come, and sometimes they send you the resume to, you know, whatever platform that you ask. And they never hear from you whether, am I going to get an interview? Am I not?
Yeah.
And they wait in hope. And the problem is this. See, some person, they're just sending resumes. So there's no time. For them, the value of sending resumes is very low. But for another person who really, I want to work in Liberal Arts, I want to work in BFM, right? They spend hours and hours preparing their resume especially for you. Now, the problem is you look at resume, it doesn't really seem like somebody you don't bother, right? To that person, wow, I'm so disappointed. I'm so upset.
Yeah.
I'm so rejected, right? And this, the same part about employee experience, take it one step further. Because these guys are either going to be your ambassadors or they're going to be people who will say, I will never, you know, I hate this company, you know. And because of the fact that they had an interview and they didn't get hired. And we got a lot of cases like that. Because for me, the good thing is I'm so available in the sense that my email's everywhere. These candidates write to me. They go on my Facebook, you know.
They say, how come nobody responded to me?
Yeah, so then I go to HR, what are you guys doing? But they tell me, boss, I got 500 people applied in the last 2 months. How am I going to get back, you know, right? So then I say, look, it's just a process, right? We need to start thinking about this. I give you a good quote by this guy, Dan Schwabel. He says, companies need to start humanizing their candidate experience because job seekers can easily share their negative experiences online and decide never to apply to that company again. Treat your candidates like you would your employees or customers because they have the power to refer strong candidates even if they don't get hired. Mm. Right? So this is some work that this guy did in terms of research. So I think one of the things I suggest, and I told my team, you know, this year we're going to focus on rejected candidate experience because there's one company in the world that actually did it really well, a company called Virgin, right? Mm. So Virgin gets about 150,000 resumes and about 3,000 are hired and 147,000 are not hired. These people are angry. Many of them are customers of Virgin. And then they go, I don't want to fly Virgin. I don't want to do this. They become upset with Virgin. So what Virgin did was, they cleverly said, okay, let's look at this segment and let's make a business out of it. So they take those rejected candidates and then they work with them and make them feel so happy, even though they got rejected, that they become ambassadors of Virgin. Mm. And they end up actually buying more from Virgin. So, in fact, last year when they experimented, they grew £7 million of additional sales from these candidates.
That's a very interesting story. And it's not only that, right? But the fact that if you intend for your company to be around for a long time, these people are going to move on and do different things. And they'll remember you,
absolutely,
right? Oh, that company was really good. They got back to me even though I didn't get the job. And you just left a good taste,
absolutely,
you know, in their mouth, you know?
And sometimes even, I do this sometimes, you know, when we say, look, it's not going to work out. But you know what? I found there's these two other companies that I think may make sense. And I refer them out, right? Mm. You know, would you want to? And they say, oh, yeah, sure, you know. And then they actually get opportunities somewhere else, right? They become your friends to some extent to say, hey, you know, in spite of that happening, you know, sometimes, look, I'm a small company, you know, I can only hire X amount. Yeah. So I know I'd love to hire all you guys. I just can't. I can't afford it. I can't do it. But when we have those kind of dialogues, but I was impressed by the fact that HR in Virgin made this into a business. Mm. Because by managing the rejection experience, you are able to create a P&L of, because now you create ambassadors who buy your products, and then online you create opportunities to sell. That was amazing. So I think in Malaysia, again, it's not something I think will be a trend, but I think that the more I talk about it, I think more HR leaders are like, why are we creating pissed off people when there's an opportunity to create engagement with your company? And who knows, in the future, these guys may develop themselves to be potential candidates again for us. Mm. So I think this is a space that we really need to explore.
Right, and humanizing the whole thing. And in nine, performance management systems will start to evolve.
So I again, back to my earlier point about feedback. Like, when you get feedback, I think the point is that we need to start looking at performance management very differently. Like, because I think two things. Like, first, I told you about the output-based system. So when we start managing performance for output, and we're not managing performance for work, for time, I think we're starting to be really strategic for the business. And the second piece is the piece that we spoke about earlier, is that, performance management is not something that has to be individual-based. It can be team-based. So I think the combination of putting a few pieces together will start you thinking, how do I manage performance management? And the third part is feedback. So you know you want to get to output-based, you know, number one. You know, you want to make sure that there's a team element, you know, so there's a collaborative spirit, which is very key. And the last piece is to really think through the feedback piece, you know, in terms of how can I continue to drive performance. That means managing performance is not just paying and increments and so on. It's also managing growth and enabling performance to go higher. How do we embed those three pieces? So I think if you know that those three things are happening, you will start to see a differentiated way you do performance. And it cannot be once a year. It cannot be once a year I sit my boss and say, you know, boss, how do I do? What should I improve? You know, next year, you know, what are my key tasks? Because Usain Bolt will never be a great athlete if his coach sits with him once a year and says, you know, here's my feedback, here's how you're going to do, and here's... Cannot.
Yeah.
It's a flawed process already, you know. Having it, even some companies, we do it twice a year. Wow. You know, every 6 months I get feedback. Cannot. It has to change. So there has to be a continued system. I don't know what the answer is. Nobody does. But I think we need to start thinking, you know, and saying, like, you know, let's figure out a monthly cycle, a quarterly cycle, worst case, that has to happen. So those things have to change. And I think with big data, you will start to see, I can even do daily, I can do hourly, because I give you feedback, you know, by building digital copies. So if I build digital copies for employees, my performance on an hourly basis can be monitored. Wow. I got so much data to... Can you imagine, if you have a lead, you play games, right? When you have a leaderboard and you say you're number 4, I want to be number 3, right? Mm. But if you have a cockpit and your performance is measured on an hourly basis, you are saying, I want to strive higher, I want to strive higher. And I think that's where we have to start thinking about. And it can happen, you know, gamify jobs, you know. Yeah. There's a lot of
that's
stuff that
I
can be happening.
That's how I feel whenever I go and play my Bejeweled.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, sure. The final one, HR leaders move to level 4 and become business leaders.
Yeah, so the last one is that, you know, if you look at the HR function, there's a couple of levels. HR is administrators, HR is functional experts, number 2. HR is level 3 is HR is strategists. And the last level is HR is business leaders. That means they're outside in, they're not thinking like HR leaders. My job is not to help the employer. My job is to help the business grow, right? Part of my role is to ensure there's employee engagement, you know, employee retention, and so on and so forth. Those are the metrics. But really, I'm a business leader. That's what we call outside in HR, right? And so, to me, I feel that Malaysia, we're stuck. Some HR leaders are administrators, some are functional. You know, some are reaching there as the strategic.
Yeah.
And I think this year is going to be a breakthrough. I feel that the HR function has evolved. And you look at the quality of some of the HR leaders in different companies. It's getting better, no? Much, much more strategic, much. So we got few strategic leaders, but can they evolve to the next level? Do they have the ear of the CEO? Can they be an advisor to the CEO? And that's what it is. So will the CEO, when he wants to do something, first thing is to check with HR, hey, what do you think?
Mm.
When that happens, you know you're a business leader because you know that you have the ears of the CEO.
Mm.
And that's key. So I think this year, you know, even if one or two key leaders in HR succeed in doing that, right, you have an opportunity. You see, the biggest flaw in HR is not many HR leaders become CEOs. Why? Mm. Because of that. We haven't moved from being strategic to be business leader.
Mm.
Because when we can show that we are business, when we can look at rejected candidate and say, hey, that's an opportunity to build a P&L, right?
Mm.
Wow, then you know that this guy is potentially, you know, a future CEO, because they're not only thinking, but they're thinking at a business alignment level. And so I think that's the final piece that I want to share with everyone. How do we move to level 4 HR leaders?
Okay, Roshan Tiran from Leadernomics talking about the top 10 predictions for HR. At noon, we'll have Enterprise Biz Bites. You've been listening to Race Again, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.